member of WildGamesProductions.com and D20Radio.com.
Roll for initiative.
Greetings, everybody, and welcome to a Roll for Initiative podcast, issue number 50, the big 5-0, Nick.
Oh, God.
We're old now.
I'm old and fear things. Help.
As you hear, that's DM Nick, and I am DM Vince. And tonight with us, a special guest host for Crossover Promotions, part of the WGPN family, DM Crispy from the Save or Die podcast.
It's the Crispy Show, the Crispy Show.
Oh, jeez. That was only reserved for Glenn, all right?
I was going to say,
thank you for having me on your show tonight, gentlemen.
Why, you are welcome.
So we got a great show. You know, Jason is actually sick, and he was actually stuck at work, too, at the same time. So he wanted to make sure his show got out because of we haven't had a show in like 2 weeks because of a Mother's Day and everything. And
I think he's got a case of goblin pox or something.
Goblin pox. So anyway, Nick.
Yes.
What do we got for our stars?
So yeah, stars. Yeah, we got a couple new stars on iTunes. First one here, I like this one, is from PowerMat5000. And he says, what's old is new again. He gave us 5 stars. He goes, I want to thank you for returning my interest into D&D. With other podcasts to choose from, this one centers on the one I played and loved without confusing it with other editions or other games. References to other games definitely click the nostalgia button, but this is one I want to learn more about. Please keep up the great work. 5 stars are not to be taken lightly. P.S. Clerics equal blunt weapons. 5. You can believe that all you want, Power Matt 5000.
You
had to get that in there.
They're picking on you in the iTunes now, too.
And another one from Tyrion Alexander. He said, great cast, 5 stars. And I have been listening to the cast from the beginning. The hosts are fun to listen to, and they are informative as well. I currently run 4E games. We won't hold that against you. But I love the cast because it reminds me of the good times I had with First Edition. This is my top 5 podcasts of the 20 or so that I listen to. And I always stay current with the cast. Keep up the great job, guys, and long live D&D. Well, so we have almost 70 ratings right now on iTunes. And keep them coming, everybody. We love hearing from you. Any feedback is much appreciative.
Hell yeah.
So that's it on our little stars review.
Awesome. Yeah. And if you've been questioning where to find our forums, I know a couple people were questioning, but you can find us at osrgaming.org. That's where our new home is right now.
Yep.
We were consolidating all our forums, and we want to be in one place.
Consolidate, reorganize, get our stuff together.
We'll still be on D20 Radio because they're our sponsor, and I'll still post up and answer questions there. But we wanted to consolidate all the other 4,000 forums that we had.
Yeah, we were like all over the place there.
Yeah, and people were like asking questions, and we would forget to go one place, and then they would get mad. So I don't want, you know, someone's question not to be answered. So I prefer us all in one spot. OSRgaming.org is our new home of fun and love and peace and gaming. Right, Crispy?
That's right. Save or die for anyone who listens to both. And Thaco's Hammer
love
are also there.
Is he getting all hippie on me? What?
All right. Let's head into Sage Advice.
Sage Advice.
We could sing this week, Nick. Sage Advice.
Sage Advice. Hey.
Hey. That's right. So Sage.
Sage.
You're a little late, Crispy. Sorry.
Oh. God, he's always been off.
We've got a couple things here. Let's start with the voicemail that we have. So you guys don't mind muting your mics, and we'll hit this out there.
Hi, guys. This is Cal. You're currently catching me on some AO Forsaken stretch of Interstate 80 between Wyoming and Nebraska somewhere. As I've been driving, I've been listening to your podcast and their wonderful driving companionship. But it had me thinking of something. In the games, in my gaming group, we always seem to come across social combat a lot. And I've never really seen a good way to handle it in first edition. It somewhat gets handled better in, say, like Old World of Darkness or Legend of the Five Rings, but really I've never seen a good way to handle it in first edition. I think it's part of the reason why you don't see a lot of people always sort of focusing on, like, say, playing a bard if they get the stat for it, or just even like a charismatic rogue or so forth. So do you guys have any special rules for handling social combat? That'd be great. Thanks much. Bye-bye.
Social combat.
It's an interesting
social
question.
Combat?
Yeah.
I'm confused.
What are you confused about?
I'm trying... Combat in itself is kind of social. You're taking a weapon, you're hitting them on the head with it. I think that's kind of social.
There's interaction there, yeah, you know. Yeah.
There's interaction.
I think
painful, but interaction nonetheless.
Maybe like he means like arguing or bargaining or something like that, maybe.
Oh. Mm. Oh, we just kill things and take their stuff.
Nick.
Oh. Nick plays the right way. No.
Wow.
And my way is the right way. I don't know. I think when you get into like the Wilderness Survival Guide and the Dungeoneer Survival Guide, where he has those proficiencies, you could, if you want like a skill set to maybe help with that sort of stuff, I guess some of that's there. You could borrow some of those skill sets out of there in Oriental Adventures to maybe help with that sort of thing. If there's proficiencies that could, you know, if you want a mechanic to do that. Otherwise, you know, just kind of role play it and wing it and use your best judgment, you know?
Yeah, I'd have to say that as a DM. I mean, if a player can role play it out and they really can act it out really well, I would, you know, make a decision based upon that. Or you can always just use the old D6 method.
Yeah. I mean, the only thing I can think of that would be similar is like, I know like Chaosium's with their basic role playing, they have like their skills for like everything, you know, and for like Call of Cthulhu, whatever, and it's based off a percentile role. But I mean, I guess you could use like, for example, maybe based off your charisma, I am sure there are scores there that you can use if it's an interaction sort of thing based off charisma or comeliness, if you use that. I don't know. I mean,
I'm thinking maybe a D6 roll and then charisma and then whatever bonus on your charisma added to the D6 roll.
Yeah, I guess as long as you're consistent as a DM and stating to the players, okay, when we get into like social situations, you know, role play it, but this is the mechanic we're going to use. So, unless it just doesn't change all the time, what do you think, Crispy?
It's no problem. Coming from being a Pathfinder and 3.5 player, as well as a basic player, I'm not a big fan of social skills because, when you have an actual mechanic or a set stat, if you will, aside from charisma, for role-playing, like, you know, diplomacy or gather information, all of that. Really tends to detract from the game because you have this thing that is set out and all you have to do is roll. There's no interaction anymore between you as the DM and the players because they're just going to want to make their D20 roll.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
I think that's a very good point. I think you hit the nail on the head there. When you get it reduced down to a mechanic, it does take the role-playing aspect out of it a bit.
Yeah. I would go with what Vince was saying, but instead of a D6 roll, I would do a 2D6 roll. And then, you know, Vince and I are both basic players, or classic, or whatever you want to call it. I would use the NPC reaction table.
Yeah,
so,
okay.
Yeah, and you can give them that bonus for charisma because that's already inherent into that system.
Ah.
Yeah, refer
violence
back.
Inherent in the system, yes.
Refer back to the NPC reaction table in basic. That might be a good idea.
Yeah, it's a 2D6 roll, and you know, there's a table from friendly to indifferent to hostile to attacks immediately. And, you know, you could give them, depending, I personally would have them make I would have them make their argument as they normally would. But if they make a particularly good argument or a particularly compelling argument, I would give them a bonus above their charisma.
Sure.
And I believe with that one, it's you want to roll lower on it. So,
are you sure?
You know, you would just use it like normal, but give them a charisma bonus above and beyond what they would normally get.
Good job, Crispy. You earned a cookie tonight.
Thank you.
You get 50 experience points.
Yeah. Nick, you lose 50.
Yes.
That's right. On this podcast, we give experience points out.
2,225 more, and I'll be like, close to leveling.
Well, at least you're not like Nick, who's in negative.
What the heck? I know. I'm playing the Cavalier. He's starting negatives.
That's
what
right. I got a couple emails.
I'm an armature. What do you want from me?
Got a couple emails to look over. I got one from Crystal. And I'm not going to read it. It's a big, long email, but she started playing D&D when she was 8 or so, around 82. And she stopped for many years, got interested in maybe about a couple years, 5 years ago, she's saying in her email. And she loves the potential First Edition has because it's unlike computer games, you aren't limited to what the program is put in the game.
Right.
So she likes that. And she's also, our podcast and First Edition has inspired her to write her PhD dissertation on that she's starting to plan this winter on how RPGs, both computer and tabletop, can be used to develop teamwork and business skills in players compared to proprietary business simulation games.
Washed his mouth out, can't do a darn thing with it, huh?
Yeah. Well, she wants to show how playing games and things like this show support teamwork and people working together as opposed to not, so... She wanted to let us know that she was doing that. I thought that was kind
of
cool.
Wow. You know what? She was mentioned that she was writing her dissertation on role-playing and social interaction. There was a book written back late 70s, early 80s about role-playing games. It's basically...
Oh, I know what it's called.
You know what it is? I have it. I forget the name of it.
What is Dungeons & Dragons?
No. Oh. It's another one. It's more broad about role playing in general. I have the book. I'm trying to remember the name. I got it for Christmas. But it was basically someone else's dissertation. This was, and like I said, this was like late 70s, early 80s. Someone did this. It was a sociology experiment. They were a gamer and they wanted to explain the sociological aspects of the gaming subculture. And I think that would be a really good book for her to get to reference if she hasn't referenced it already. Maybe if I could maybe email her back and give her the name, title of the book. I'm just not near my stuff.
Sure.
So...
I know there was a great book called What is Dungeons and Dragons that broke down the social history and how people played the game back in the 70s and 80s. It's an old book from probably early 80s. Okay. Had that funky green, like slimy font on the front cover. It's really cool. I just pulled it out of the bookshelf. I'm like, oh, cool. I forgot about this book.
All right. That sounds interesting. I'd like to read both of those, actually.
Yeah, the one I got, very good. It gives you a really good look about, you know, I guess you would call almost the golden age of role-playing in late 70s, early 80s. It was really starting to take off. It gives you a nice look into it. And not just talks about D&D, but I remember they were talking about, chivalry and sorcery. They were talking about, surprisingly enough, there was a pretty good group, I guess, playing Empires of the Petal Throne as well, where he was doing his studies at. So, pretty cool stuff.
The What is Dungeons and Dragons book was written by John Butterfield.
Okay.
It was cool. Came out in 84.
Okay. I have to find the other one. I'm like, all my stuff is in all another room, and I can't go get it.
Okay, and next email comes from SoCal Canuck. I'm going to go with that.
Okay.
And he goes, dudes. Oh, I don't know. Crispy, maybe you can help me with the pronunciation. D-E-W-D-S?
Dudes.
There we go.
Okay.
He finished listening to our episodes. He said one thing that irked or bothered him was issue 34 of the Halloween episode when Nick half-jokingly called out Geek Fight and thought who would win between Strahd and the Demi-Lich from the Tomb of Horrors.
Oh, Acerak?
Acerak, thank you. He said we bantered around with it a bit with me and Jason going for Strahd, Nick, you going with Acerak. He said we should do a special insert and set up a battle between the two heavyweights with Nick playing Acerak and me or Jason playing the Strahd, one of us being like the referee DM. You know, mano-y-mano, neutral ground, no monster having a home field advantage, fight to the death. How about it?
I love it.
You guys should put that up in the OSR.
I so want to be Acerak. Oh, yeah.
So that's what he writes in.
I love it. We'll have to do that.
Save it for Halloween.
Okay.
It'll be the RFI special treat.
It's cage match of Strahd versus Acerak. Fight!
The cage should be made out of, like, bars of annihilation. And it's on, like, the plane of negative energy. And one of you has to have, like, a Sylvester Stallone accent when you're
watching. This is my love. What's up with this mist?
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And we have another one from Theo Hall, who says we never read his emails, but I've never heard about that. But he's a 15-year-old gamer from North NSW Australia. Was that North Southwest? I don't know.
That's New South Wales.
Oh, New South Wales.
I know him. He's I seen him on Facebook. Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Him.
Is that the kid who like talked with Jason about martial arts? Is that that guy?
Yeah, that could be him. He likes martial arts. Yeah.
Yeah. I've seen the name. DM Iron Fist, right?
Oh, it's actually, his name is Teo, not Theo. Sorry.
Oh.
DMPC Teo, he calls himself. He listens to Sod and Book of Shadows and RFI. And he was talking about our last episode, Sweep the Leg, that we did.
Mm-hmm.
He wants to know what our thoughts about a psionic monk with martial arts would be. And he commented on firing to combat. What?
Mm-hmm.
Firing to combat. He would say a negative two to hit. And if you miss, there is a percent chance, he said 80% maybe, of hitting a random participant in melee from either team. What do you think?
Psionic monk. That would be a Jedi.
I was thinking Goku, so...
I'm thinking Jedi.
Shooting fireballs, Kamehameha waves.
This isn't the adventuring party you've been looking for.
He also says that he's having some problems getting some of the... podcast off iTunes. I wanted to clear that up once again that now iTunes does not hold the podcast. It just holds the feed for the podcast. So if earlier episodes aren't accessed, iTunes won't show them on as being an episode. You'd have to go directly to the site.
I know the first 8 of Sod are missing now because I wanted to go back and re-listen to them.
Yeah.
But 9 is there, which is my first episode. So, hey, go download that. I've been going back and listening to lots of old episodes of both shows.
Yeah, and, if people go and start listening to 1 through 8, it'll pop back up on the feed again. It's just because no one has really accessed those shows in a while.
Mm-hmm.
Because all our fans are current.
Yeah, I have shows 1 through 49, so... On my iTunes feed. And all the special inserts and everything like that.
Yeah.
So I don't know what's going on with his. Maybe my iTunes is just better.
Maybe. Last email comes from Paul. He says, hi, I'm 14 and I love listening to your show. And I wanted to ask your advice on something even though I play a slightly different system. My players never pay attention during sessions. They're always doing something else during the game. I wanted to know if you guys could give me some insight about how to fix this. Thanks, and by the way, I want to hear more of the audio drama. Thanks again. Nick.
I have the perfect piece of advice.
I'm sorry, I wasn't paying attention. What was that again?
Oh, Nick. Go ahead, no, Crispy.
Rocks fall, everybody dies. And if you do that enough weekends in a row, they'll start paying attention.
Yes, they will.
I'm kidding.
Roll dice.
I think you... Yeah, just... try to be more engaging. Like, if you're... I know a problem I have, or used to have, is you rolled a hit. Oh, you hit. Next person. So now I've gotten, if you listen to any of the OSR actual plays that I'll be running, I like to describe things, be engaging.
That was way above your skill?
Oh, way above my skill.
Yes.
Well, another thing you could do as a DM is making sure that people are paying attention is be a little assertive right before the game and say, please don't do any distracting things like have your iPods or your laptops out. You know, we're here to play, so let's play.
I learned the greatest thing from the great Joe DM. Cue sound effect.
The great Joe DM.
Because there was a couple times when we weren't paying attention when he was DMing, so Joe would just sit there and roll dice and start doing things to us, and he'd be like, oh, you're playing? Well, guess what? You just got attacked.
Yeah, exactly.
Picturesque.
Like, yeah, not that bad.
Okay. It's just mean, Nick. That's just really mean.
Yeah.
Thank you. Oh.
Nick, what are we going to do with you?
Not much.
Take away more experience.
My ways. Bah.
So what was your advice to this young man?
I gave my advice.
Oh, you did? I didn't hear you.
Yeah, I did. Sorry. I wasn't paying attention. What the heck?
Anyway, you can send us an email at rfipodcast@gmail.com, or you can give us a little ring ding on the telephone ting, 570-865-4210. Tell us about the hotline. That's right.
Hotline.
No, no, not like that.
I don't want to do that forever. Check that off my list.
Now you can die successfully.
I can.
Item 7 off his bucket list. Great.
Yeah. Bucket list. 570-865-4210, the hotline. And call us in. Tell us your stories about anything to do with gaming. Tell us maybe what happened in your group that week. Anything. We like voicemails. We like to play them, and we like to talk about them. So,
hearing them.
Yeah, even if it's not a question, it could be, you know, just a statement. You know, why not? Julie did a 9-minute one. Why not? You guys could do your own segment. So just call in, and we'll play it. What do you think?
Huh? What?
What? Yeah, shut up. All right, let's wrap this up and head into the big old table manners.
Typical. Of all the evil creatures in the world, I'd like to find one with table manners.
What, are you kidding me? I spent years cultivating the worst table manners on the planet.
Table manners.
All right, for table manners this week, everybody, we're going to be talking about probably something that every DM has experienced at least once in their DMing career, is when the party splits up.
Yeah. How to
keep
that flow.
How do you deal with this as a DM? Now, how do you keep the flow going? You know, from a DM perspective, from the player perspective, how do you deal with it? And how much time should you devote as a DM to a player or a group of players that have split from the party? So, Vince,
well,
let's start with you.
First of all, don't block your players from splitting up, and don't punish them for splitting up either. Players want to go where players want to go, and you as a DM, your job is to accommodate within reason to their needs in game. So what you have to kind of do with splitting up a party is allow a certain amount of time to go by with certain characters, and then when you find a good situation that they're in, leave them with a cliffhanger and jump back over to the other bunch of players, so that gives the original player time to think and also stew.
Mm-hmm.
That's one way I try to keep the flow in a group with split groups. What about you, Nick?
I tend to do the same thing. There are times where, you know, the party is going to split up. Situation that generally happens, I would say in urban environments, it's probably the number one for me as a DM.
Yeah.
When the players want to split up, because they all have their own agendas when they get in the town or to a city. They want to pursue, you know, finding certain things, buying certain things, trying to find certain people, whatever it may be. In that respect, being that a very good example, I try to treat it somewhat cinematically, I think, like you do. Get to a certain point where it's a real nice place where they might find something a little more of their own personal quest, and then, you know, cutscene, go to this person. You know, stuff like that. Be kind of cinematic about it, I guess.
Yeah.
It's probably the best way, because it keeps them a little more involved.
Yeah.
And it keeps other people, you know, feel like they're not getting their fair share. You know, so you want to give everybody as close as equal time as you can.
Every player wants the spotlight. You can't give it to one player.
Right, exactly. How about you, Crispy Critter?
Well, there's always that mantra that everyone kind of touts of don't split the party, because
yes,
you split the party, bad things happen. But it doesn't have to be like that. I'm pretty much on the same page you guys are. Try to keep it entertaining. And then I think it's a really kind of empathic thing. You have to be able to feel kind of when there's going to be a lull. And I think that should be your key for when to wrap it up. Kind of look around at the party, and if they're starting to daze off or busting out their cell phones, you know, wrap it up and move on to everyone else.
Yeah.
Because it's like, I guess, yeah, the best piece of advice I would think would be to keep it cinematic. Like, you know, you have in horror movies or sci-fi movies, there's always the one that sneaks off into the dark corridor and, you know, she's doing her thing. Then they hear a strange noise and they pull back the cover, and then the camera switches to someone else, or the scene transitions.
Right. Dun, dun,
now,
dun, dun.
Play it like that.
Now, there are times, like I said, the number one time I've ever seen anybody where the party kind of splits off, either into two or more, you know, little subgroups, is in that urban environment. Less so would be a wilderness environment. But, you know, it has happened. Example where I could think of where a party might split up in a urban environment, or even a dungeon, would be maybe one or more might be doing like a little reconnaissance, especially like your ranger types or your thieves. They might do a little bit of a recon ahead. You know, maybe like I said, in the wilderness, like if they're in a forest setting, maybe you're gonna have your ranger in the party, he wants to split off and recon maybe a mile or two ahead and see what's, you know, up beyond where those hills are, and then report back to the party. Something like that. So those are a few examples I could think of things like that happening. So
yeah, and I think that's just good playing. I think that's smart and clever, and I think it should be rewarded. Like, you really shouldn't punish the party for splitting up.
No.
Well, no, not really. I mean,
you can, like, take the time to have something, quote-unquote, bad happen, but, like, you know, don't slaughter everyone just because they split up.
Well, I mean, if they're in the dungeon, for example, and the thief says, well, I want to go off and sneak off and try to find the great jewel of MacGuffin myself, and...
You let him.
And you let him, and if he runs into that... pack of 50 orcs that were in the one room that you were planning for a big battle, and he's the only one there, well, you know what? He's going to be an orc snack.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I got a great story involving a party splitting up. I was playing in a group.
Yeah.
We were playing D20 Modern, which I shudder every moment now thinking I ever played that game. But anyway...
There's better modern D20 games, definitely.
Yeah, so I was playing that game, and this guy was DMing, and he was not the greatest DM in the world, and we were working with him. Mm-hmm. So my friend in the group decided that he wanted to do one thing, and I wanted to do another thing, so the party split with us. And it got to the point when I was like, okay, so I'm going to go sneak back to the library and steal the book while the guy's outside. It's like, no, you can't do that. You're just being a snot. Well, he didn't say snot, but, you know. Think of another
S-word. The DM said this to you?
Yeah, he was like, you can't do that. No.
Jeez.
He started screaming at me. He's like, no, that's not where you're going. I'm like, whoa, railroad.
Yeah, like, it's not cool.
Yeah, so what I did was after we took a 5-minute break and I talked to him, I'm like, dude, you can't railroad players. And if my character thinks that he wants to go steal the book while the guy's outside, let him go. Let him try to do it. Maybe the guy came back. You know, maybe he gets caught. Maybe he dies. That's my responsibility, not yours to say, no!
Jeez.
I think
sounds like he was kind of an inexperienced referee DM.
Yeah, he wasn't a very, and he's still not a very good DM, honestly. But anyway, I don't really speak with him much.
I can't imagine why. Like, Vince, why don't you talk to that guy anymore?
I don't play in that group.
Snot.
Yes, I'm a snot.
Expletive deleted.
Yes, I don't play in that group anymore because various reasons.
So that's the group that played the edition that shall not be named.
No, that's not that group. The group got to the point when it was, okay, I'm going to play D&D 3.0, or I'm going to play AD&D 1.4, or whatever. I'm going to play basic. So this guy would play this type of character, the strong, big guy with the long hair and the beard and that beats the crap out of everyone and intimidates everyone and collects as much money as possible. The other guy was going to play the timid but yet explorative wizard, always looking for knowledge. And then the third guy was always going to play the enforcer type guy, the police officer, the bounty hunter, or the brute guy, just to back up the first guy. So it got to the point where just everybody played the same type of character
over and over again. Yeah, I can understand that.
And I would play different characters, and I just got tired of it. I'm like, dude, I can't do this anymore.
Yeah, you got bored. Like,
I got bored,
and I don't blame you. Like,
I just didn't. I just stopped showing up. I was, I made excuses, and I just stopped showing up.
I was playing with these one guys over Skype. And I just had to make it up an excuse that I just didn't want to play this dwarf anymore. Whoa, wait, what?
Yeah, like we all know.
I'm at a complete loss.
The actual play podcast, everybody blames Crispy because it ended because he didn't want to play Trask anymore.
It's painful to play Trask.
You made the character up. You have to live with it.
I did. I made my voice. I have to use it.
That's right.
I was going to say another thing about splitting the party is it's a perfect Scooby-Doo moment. You get that guy sneaking off, and then the creeper sneaks out of the painting and captures Daphne.
Now we would have gotten away with it, weren't you pesky kids and your dog?
Like, yeah. The thing about having them being isolated or splitting up is, yeah, you can do like nasty tricks on them, but like, I think it's kind of poor sport to just kill them when they're all alone. Unless they do something incredibly stupid, like go across 50 orcs and then they're like, I'm going to attack them. They're just, they're only however many hit die creatures. But yeah, but there's 50 of them.
Yeah. Well,
might want to run.
Mm-hmm. Never!
Briark!
Yeah. So... Gosh. I guess that pretty much would sum everything up.
I think so too.
How to act as a player, be patient, and let your fellow gamers get their chance because you'll have your chance. And don't, when the DM says, we'll leave it there, I've seen a lot of people go, but well, just one more thing. No, that's it. Don't ask any questions to the DM. He's moved his attention on.
Mm-hmm.
Be right. Fair.
You got to know when to break the scene. You might come back to him, but... Got to keep everybody involved.
If you have questions, exactly. Write it on the piece of paper. As soon as it's your turn again, you can ask it.
Yep.
So I guess that's going to conclude that. Tell us how your experience is about that. You know the number. You know the email. What is it, Nick?
Oh, you had to ask.
Nick is like our Glenn. Or maybe Glenn is like your Nick. I don't know.
I don't know.
I don't know.
I wonder what Nick would say this week.
I don't even know my own email address.
RFI at RFI dot... No, wait, no.
I
believe it's RFIPodcast@gmail.com.
Whoa, Crispy got it.
I don't know. I just listen to the show every week. I might be wrong. Who knows?
I don't know. But what's...
What are you implying?
Let's head into Creature Feature next.
Creature Feature.
All right. In Creature Feature this week, got another pretty interesting monster. I've never used it.
Neither have I.
But I've thought about it. It's going to be kind of cool. It's out of the Fiend Folio. It's the Needle Man. It's on page 67 of the Fiend Folio.
It's a great book.
Yeah.
Yeah. Can I actually just say, the Fiend Folio was the first monster book I ever owned.
Really?
When I was first getting into D&D. Yeah. I found it. I got it for like $3. The used bookstore. Still in great condition. I've always found that, like, the Fiend Folio in used bookstores is really prevalent. They're always in really good condition, too.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, did they just make a million of these things and not sell them?
Yeah.
Man. I guess.
So, I used to think the Fiend Folio was just full of silly stuff. Like, the Adherer, Ogre Mock, King of the Evil Attackers,
and
all these guys. Just the Flumph. Just silly, stupid monsters. And then you guys started reviewing them. You know, every other week or whatever, you would bring something out of the Fiend Folio. And I would listen to your ideas for it. And I've really come to, through you guys and your, like, love of this book, I've really come to appreciate the Fiend Folio more and more.
I think this was the most underused book. I mean, no one really bought it. Because it was like,
there's a lot of stuff that's just really silly.
Yeah, but it's still really good
stuff.
And
some of it, not so much. I mean,
this monster.
You'd be surprised
at some
of the stuff.
The Adherer is freaking awesome.
There's some pretty good nuggets in here.
Let's focus on the Needleman today.
Yes. Yeah. But this guy, he's very rare. Number appearing, 5 to 50.
That's rare.
Ouch. Yeah, a lot of them.
That's a lot of good hit.
Yeah, pretty good hit dice, 3 plus 4. He's neutral, low intelligence. But they're a wood-dwelling, intelligent form of plant life that kind of looks like a zombie, but they're not zombie creatures. And embedded inside their flesh are all these little needles, almost like extra sharp pine needles. And he could shoot up to six of these every round. That they do about a point or two of damage, each needle. Now, the catch to this is, now they're a range of 20 feet, so accuracy of a short-range arrow, but for practical purposes, its supply of needles is infinite. Mm-hmm. So imagine if you had, like, 50 of these guys with all these needles that they could shoot. Infinitely.
Yeah, I mean, that's 1 to 6. If they get all 6 and they do max damage, that's 12.
Talk about death by 1,000 cuts.
Yeah, but then times 50?
Yeah.
That's
insane. Yeah. Another thing that's interesting about these creatures is they're particularly vulnerable to magic. So I guess any attacks, magical attacks against these creatures do triple damage. And also other spells of non-offensive nature, such as charm plants, are triply effective against it. As appropriate.
I wonder why they hate elves so much.
Yeah, you know, that was kind of a throwaway sentence there. It says, Needlemen appear to hate elves and will attack them on sight. Now, I'm thinking maybe they were constructs made by the elves thousands of years ago. Maybe you could use this as some sort of plot thing. And they maybe rebelled against the elves, the wood elves, and now they completely hate all elves that they see. I don't know. So, I don't know.
Maybe I was thinking something similar to that.
Yeah, I was kind of thinking that, you know, maybe they were created by the elves. And they were,
or maybe they were like, maybe because they're like hideous, they're zombies. And they're filled with like pine needles. Maybe the elves at one point tried to eradicate them. And so now they have like long-standing hatred.
That's a possibility too. There's another.
Maybe.
Yeah, I think this monster would work really well in basic as well, because your elf is both a fighting man and a magic user. So, you know, they have the throwaway line of hatred for elves, but it makes it doubly more because elves are magic users.
Doubly more?
Doubly more. So they hate elves.
Wait, did you say doubly more or doubly more?
Doubly.
Oh, okay. I thought you said Dudley Moore.
No.
Okay.
No.
Do you want a drink? Oh, gosh, this is great.
Hello, martini. Anyway, maybe it was that the evil elves were taking other elves and, like, making them into, like, the Frankenstein monster and, like, these evil elves just kind of died and they buried him. They were just like, meh. And they buried him in the ground. They came back to seek revenge or something.
And as the Needlemen are their unrested bodies, souls?
Yeah.
That's actually a really, really awesome thing. Like,
that's
and the needles come from the ground because they were buried in the forest, which have needles that always fall on the ground. And it kind of soaked into their skin as they were, like, decrepitating. Yeah, I made up my own word. In the ground. And then when they came back, they were just like, and they shoot the needles.
Huh. Now,
with the machine guns out of the back.
Yes, exactly.
Now, do you think this creature would work with other creatures, maybe?
I don't think so. It's got a it's a low intelligence creature. I don't think it'd work with any of them.
The only thing I could think of that if they were going to work with anything else, maybe in conjunction being in the same habitat, would be like the Vegapygmies.
Yeah. Maybe a water elemental?
Maybe, that too.
I can see like a night hag.
Night hag, yeah, maybe. I was just picturing Vegapygmies and Needlemen, Attack of the Vegetable Creatures, you know? When plants go bad.
maybe some kind of evil fae, like an evil nymph or satyr or what are some of the uglier fae beings? Like
a corrid?
Like I guess. Hags, Vegapygmies, like plant creatures, fae.
Mm-hmm.
I have like one. I can view it in my head, but I can't think of the name.
It'll come to you.
It'll come to me.
But okay. Yeah, that's a pretty cool creature. I was looking at. I like just that one sentence. That was kind of throwaway. You know what? You can run away with that. I think we came up with some pretty cool plot points that you can maybe incorporate this creature into a campaign. So,
I would. Yeah, I would have never used these before, but now that you guys pointed it out, I really like this creature.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. So let us know what you think out there. Cool. You can go to our forums at our website, or you can go to the new forums at osrgaming.org. Let us know there what you think about the Needleman, maybe how you use it in your campaign, or if you ran up against one of these things. And this will lead us off into the Dragon's Hoard.
The Dragon's Hoard.
The Dragon's Hoard.
Dun, dun, dun.
Crispy, give me a voiceover for that.
The Dragon's Hoard. It's a little breathy.
Yeah, too breathy.
I'm a little sick.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a little... Yeah.
So this week... We have a very simple item to talk about called the crystal ball.
Oh, jeez. I got a story about this thing, but go ahead.
Oh, no. I want to hear your story.
Oh, yeah. In my one Hackmaster campaign, one of the characters he was running a cleric magic user named Chip D. Blade. Yes, Chip D. Blade. And I believe it was when they went up against the slave lords, he was able to acquire a crystal ball. And I think it was the crystal ball with telepathy or clairaudience or something like that. But he was able to get that. And when they were going up against the giant series, they were in the hall. He had the crystal ball. They already went to the hill giant chief's room, and he wasn't there. Everybody's in the feast hall. All the hill giants, the ogres, what have you, they're having a big party. They want to know where they was, where everybody was. So it was in the bedchamber of the chief. He like just took one of his personal items that was in there, used the crystal ball. Once you have a personal item, like it says in the description where we're going to talk about, you're going to have a really, really, really good chance of finding what you're looking for. And he was able to zoom in and find him and everything. I'm like, oh, brother. Yeah, there he is. There's everybody. You can see, had the whole layout of the hall, and they planned it out perfectly. And, yeah, they had a rockin' time.
So that sounds pretty cool.
Yeah, it was. On the player side, DM, I'm like, oh, whatever.
Okay. So the crystal ball is basically a scrying device, as Nick was alluding to there, pretty much. Mm-hmm. It does have some stipulations, though. It can't be just used any old time in any old way. You right. do have to have an intelligence of 12 or better of to use this item for scrying purposes, and a chance of being noticed if you're scryed upon
yep.
while used. And you have to actually know the person or slightly know the person or a picture. Maybe you've seen the person or you have to have a possession of the person. Maybe a garment of a garment. Well informed of the person, slightly informed. There's a whole chart here telling you a percentage of locating.
Yeah.
And are these cumulative? Like if you have, if you know the person, if you have like a lock of their hair and like their favorite jacket, do those all like go together to give you a higher percentage?
You know what? That doesn't actually say. I would probably do that as a DM. I'd probably say, well, you have his piece of his hair and you have his favorite sword or something.
You're dating his sister.
That's how I did it. When they had part of his, they had like something off of the chief's bed, the hill giant chief's bed. I forget what personal item. Maybe his, you know, favorite whoopee pillow. I don't know. But part of a possession is 50%, and he was slightly informed of. He knew that there was the hill giant chief and everything, so that was a 70% chance of checking total. So, and I rolled that, like, yep, hey, found him.
Well, not only can you scry, there's also the crystal ball when you first get it has maybe possibly another ability to it.
Yeah.
That is a little chart for the DM to roll on. He could do this either on the fly or he could do this ahead of time, but he could basically make it a regular crystal ball for just scrying purposes. Or he can make it a crystal ball with Clardians in it. Mm-hmm. Maybe that would be a little interesting. Or maybe with some ESP. How about that? Or telepathy. How would you like to be able to talk to someone while looking at them? I'm going to be like, huh? Who's that?
Yeah.
Think of all the fun that could be. So, what do you guys think about this?
Well, I think it's a neat magic item.
Oh, yeah.
I've never got to use it. I actually, at one point, had a wizard. Because the crystal ball actually hasn't changed that much from, you know, 1E to, like, 3X or whatever you want to call it, Pathfinder. I actually had a diviner wizard who I wanted to, my end goal was to build a crystal ball. And it actually has not changed that much over time.
So how would you guys put it in a campaign?
I told you how they found mine.
Crispy.
Killed the slave lords and took the darn crystal ball.
Against the Giants is very like a it seems like it's very Norse themed kind of campaign, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, Frost Giants, Thor. It's a very kind of Norse thing. You know, you have the Palantir from Lord of the Rings, which is, you know, supposed to be an alternate Norse kind of thing. Or of that area, a Germanic. Anyways, not going to get into it. You always have the witch with the crystal ball, and you could use it to tell fortunes, but I think it's a really good item to give, like, your big bad wizard.
Oh, yeah.
Especially with, you know, the ESP and the clairaudience and the being able to speak through it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I'd probably give it to the big bad guy and have him spying on the party all the time. And then just put he'll put traps out and do things the party has no idea how he knows, and then later on they find out how he knows, so they actually take the item after they kill him.
Yeah, it's a great I don't want to say deterrent, but it's a great way for the GM or DM to cheat a little bit and we did this and we were really secretive about it. How did he know that we were gonna go into the sewers and find the secret entrance to his wizard tower? And you know, you're like, oh, I don't know, but he knew. And then just, you don't even have to actually have him have a crystal ball. If you just want to thwart one of their plans, you can just Schrodinger's gun it in. You know, basically be like, oh, crystal ball. He had a crystal ball this whole time.
Well, I could think of how the big bad dude would use the crystal ball if he just didn't know about a certain adventuring party coming his way, but he just wants to make sure that nobody's trying to come and kill him. He sends out like little parties of gnolls or orcs, and he knows them, and he can see what they're seeing. So that's kind of like, it's almost like sending out like reconnaissance airplanes,
mm-hmm.
in a way.
Your predator kobolds.
Yeah, there you go.
I was thinking this would be a great role-playing opportunity for the party. Now, once they get the crystal ball, you know that, like, thief in the middle of the night is going to be like, oh, if I just had that crystal ball.
Mm-hmm.
Sneaking care of the crystal ball. And, like, every night he sneaks off and tries to use it while he's in town. And, like, you as a DM, and evil DM that I am, I could already see the possibilities of it becoming an intelligent item all of a sudden and having an ego to take him over, tempting him every night.
Wow. Just whispering dark secrets about the treasure that he could steal.
Yes, and every night it'd be like, the crystal ball would be like, you want to use me to see things.
Ooh. This is really getting into a kind of Palantir kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have it like pretty cool. Glowing at night for only that only the thief could see.
That only he can see. That's brilliant. Oh, that's a great that's idea. Great.
Think of all the possibilities you can do as an evil DM. Mm-hmm. Oh, well. Think of all the...
You could have the crystal ball's signals being intercepted by, say, like a mind flare with his own crystal ball or some kind of otherworldly being of greater intelligence. Just kind of
monitor. Or you try using it and you hear, boo-doo-doo, I'm sorry, the number you dialed is not in your area code. Please check the number and dial again.
Oh, God, that reminds me of a campaign we had. And we didn't have a crystal ball, but it was like a communication device, and every time we tried to use it, it was like, I'm sorry, do you know the code? It was like, we punch in a code, it was like, that's not the right code, please try again. I was like, what, is this a telephone now?
See, I was, like, as soon as you mentioned communicator, I thought, bloop, like Star Trek communicator.
Spock.
Spock!
Where's my ship?
Where's my girdle?
I love the Family Guy.
It's long. I've lost my toupee and nobody likes me.
Yeah. I like the Family Guy version of William Shatner.
He just is a cartoon character. Yeah, like, outside of being a cartoon character, he's a cartoon character.
Wrestling.com.
No.
Wrestling. Compare. Say. How do we get to Shatner? Oh, God, stop it.
Communicator.
Tambourine Man. Oh, sorry. I suggest everybody going to, speaking of Shatner, going to YouTube right now and Googling William Shatner and the movie Seven from the MTV Movie Awards.
God, I love that sketch.
William Shatner himself in every part in the movie. You have to see that. It's the greatest thing in the world.
It's really, really good.
Yes. Yes, be prepared. It does have some cursing in it, so be prepared. Anyway, I think that's going to wrap things up for tonight.
Okay.
We reached that point.
Oh, I just thought, speaking of YouTube, there is someone did a Lego animation with a song called, I believe it's called Never Split the Party.
Oh, cool.
And if you type that in, Never Split the Party, and some sort of Lego animation in a song, and it's great. It's totally D&D stuff. Well, maybe on the next, when we update the website, we'll have a link to it. It's hilarious. It's a great little song. It's great. It's like, you know, if you're into that, you know, like filking, you know, sort of stuff, the filk music, it's kind of like that sort of genre. So it's pretty cool.
There's some really good Lego animations on YouTube. Really good ones. Anyway, let's say goodnight goodnight everybody tonight. And
talk. And thanks, Crispy, for coming on.
No problem, guys.
There with us, I appreciate it.
Nick,
you
need to come on our show sometime.
Yeah, you know what? I do. I really do. So
we record kind of early. Well, for me, it's early because I'm on the West Coast. But
tell you what, your people talk to my people. We'll chat. We'll be simply found.
Yeah.
You're beautiful. Don't ever change.
Oh no, not this again.
Okay.
Don't get Crispy started in that voice again. Anyway.
Well, you know, I can always bring Christopher Walken in.
It's weird. I don't know. It's crazy.
All right, we'll let you go tonight with Crispy doing his best impersonation of William Shatner. Good night, everybody.
You walk down a 40-foot corridor. On your left is treasure. Behind you, you hear. It's too Walken-y.
Yeah.
Behind you, you hear. Anyways, good night, everybody.
Shoot him with my crossbow. Just kill him.
All right, we're leaving. Goodbye.
Roll for initiative.